Good morning. So last time we finished up talking about some additional C++ features. Talked about when we had inheritance, including all the many special kinds of inheritance that C++ lets us do, like virtual inheritance, where we could have shared implementations of superclasses that were the base class of multiple inheritedly base classes and had members. We can make that work, which required indirection, and just generally having multiple inheritance where we couldn't use the trick of just saying, oh, this pointer to the subclass, you can treat it like a pointer to the base class without doing any work because, well, we had multiple base classes and it can't be work for all of them at the same time. And the basic trick in all the cases was that our compiler, when you cast between one pointer type and another, didn't do what we were used to doing whenever we saw a cast, which was just treat the value as the other type. It actually had to convert the pointer by adjusting its offset to find the appropriate part of the object. We also spent some time talking about C++ 11, 14, later versions of the C++ standard, and some features they added, mostly because you may either want to use these, or if you use C++ in the real world, you are likely to encounter them or be asked to use them. And I'd like to make sure that you're actually familiar with that, since you theoretically or will often claim that you've learned C++ in this course, and then you go to an employer and they expect you to know what smart pointers are. You know, it'd be nice for you to actually have some vague idea so you can figure that out. So this time we're going to move on to our next topic, which, if you look at the title of the slide deck, was heaps and Huffman codes. And we're going to start by talking about an abstract data type that the first thing mentioned there, heaps, implement. And this is a thing called a priority queue. So a priority queue is kind of like a queue. You insert things and you remove things. With a queue, you insert things and you remove the least recently inserted thing. With a priority queue, the items have priorities and you remove the highest priority item. So for example, if you have a list of events with, say, dates, you might want to find the next event quickly. In that case, you want to remove your priorities are sort of the inverse of the time. You want to remove the lowest time item first. If we have a list of running programs, so our operating system, we have like one core maybe, or two cores, and we have like 79 programs that want to run on that. It has to choose which one does it actually run at any given time. And the general way it does this is it sorts the programs by how important they are. And the natural data structure for this is our priority queue. We don't actually need the whole sorted list, we just need to know what do we do next. So you want to choose the most important one. In an operating system that you'd use on a laptop, usually the notion of most important is what program am I going to notice is not running if you don't run it. So like probably whatever program is showing this picture should be the one that gets to run if it wants to. Similarly, if you have, say, a router and it has multiple connections you're making, it has data for multiple of them, and it can't send them as fast as it's receiving it because, well, your local network is probably faster than your internet connection. And so it wants a quick way to choose which one to service, wants to have a list of the pending data to send. This data structure called a priority queue is a way to do that. In all these cases, we can associate some notion of a priority with these items and choose to get service the highest priority one, the most important one. So this data structure in general is called a priority queue. So to talk about this, we're going to have our core operations, and we're going to talk about the minimum priority being the most important one. You can think of this as number one is most important. Obviously, I could explain everything I'm explaining with the maximum priority being most important. It happens for reasons of the sorts of algorithms where priority queues are important that the minimum case comes up more often, which is why we're going to use it. But you can do all this stuff by just reversing all the comparisons we're going to do and using the maximum. So our operations are we do inserts, and with a priority in an item, we can find the item with the lowest priority and delete it. So these are our important operations. Note that, unlike a general sorted list, I'm not providing any operations to access the middle of the lists. We'll talk a little bit about additional operations you might provide, but we'll never provide an operation of like, get the sixth item, you know, in priority order. We're not gonna do that. We're only gonna let you get the minimum item. We'll have ways of accessing items that, you know, to change their priorities maybe, but even if we do that, we're not gonna let you find out where it is in the sorted list. And this is gonna allow us to implement a more efficient data structure than the ones you might be used to. And you might say, well, I remember how trees work, and aren't trees just log n for both of these? So you think of a tree, we talked about using a tree to store key value pairs. So you can insert in a tree with a key, which is our priority in log n time. You can find the minimum in log n time. The way you do that in a sort balanced tree is you just always go on the left side. And you know the height of the tree is bounded by log n times some constant, so this takes theta of log n time. So in a tree, that's log n. Similarly, deleting the min, you find it, and then you delete. We know deleting in a tree is also log n time, so that's overall log n time. So you'd say, in a tree, these operations are all log n time. Are we really gonna do better than that? Like, that's, you know, seems about as good as you can get. And the answer is yes. So in some sense. So here we have like all the possible ways I could think of implementing a priority queue. And we're gonna talk about something we're gonna call a binary heap. So this is one kind of heap. There are other kinds of heaps that we will not be talking about, but I just want you to know that they exist, and that's about all I want you to know about them. So a binary heap, the find min operation is sort of already done for us, so it's constant time. So our insertion and deletion operations, the way we're organizing the data structure, is going to be like have the minimum be pre-computed all the time. And this is going to be more efficient in practice than our balanced tree implementation, which is not obvious from this asymptotic comparison. We're actually going to be doing a little less work than we would do in the balanced tree, even if we never care about find min, if we only care about delete min and insert. It ends up that this is less overhead because we're not maintaining the full sorted order, we're only maintaining the least item. And I like to mention, just so you're aware, that there are other types of heaps which we're not talking about because they're much, much more complicated. So Fibonacci heaps, you sometimes will actually see used. Strict Fibonacci heaps were described in a paper in 2012. And I don't know of no real implementation of them, but they do prove that you can actually have a data structure which does insert find min in big theta of one time, not amortized, which is why they're important. But there are faster data structures, and this is useful for showing that you can do certain things in amortized theta of one time, for example. Or if you do n of inserts, you can do them in amortized linear time. So we'll be talking about implementing this binary heap, which is types of heap. The other types of heaps have a related implementation. So if you do end up wanting to learn about them for some reason, what you learn here is like the first step. So, as I said, there are other operations which aren't part of our essential priority queue stuff. If you look at these use cases here, none of these require anything else. And if I ask you what a priority queue is, you should say, these operations mean we have a priority queue. But commonly, just like with a list, you know, list has like the sort of insert, find n, that sort of operations. We have these additional operations we may or may not want that are handy. There are some additional operations we will commonly talk about, and we'll mention briefly how to implement in a binary heap, that are, you know, useful in some applications and not in others. So these aren't really a part of priority queue, but people who implement a priority queue will often add these operations. And one of these is decrease key, that given if I have a pointer to a value I inserted or the index or some way of referring to it without finding it, changing the priority. So you can think of this, I'm in an operating system, I found out a process is important, I want to move it in my priority queue. So, you know, this is not an essential thing to have a priority queue, but you might imagine that if you implemented a priority queue, someone might ask you to do this, even though it's not an essential property of a priority queue to support this, and remove something that's in the priority queue without cost. Yeah. The question is, increase key a thing? Yes, increase key is a thing. For binary, for all, everything but Fibonacci and strict Fibonacci keep, I'm sure it can be done with the same complexity. I'm not sure for Fibonacci and strict Fibonacci keep. And these operations are log n, and the notable reason why the other types of heaps matter is because they're theta of one time, which is not intuitive, and where why those other types of heaps are kind of matchable. Because we can't do that with a balanced tree. Okay, so before I move on to start describing binary heaps, we could also have defined this ADT with find max every time we had find min and so on. And we get the same complexities because, well, let's just like flip the sign of the priorities or flip all our comparisons. Like this is a trivial change to do. It like changes everything, but it's a trivial change to do. And sometimes when you see people talking about heaps, they'll want to distinguish which kind of heap they're referring to, whether they're referring to the one that implements priority queues with find min or find max. And so sometimes you'll see the term min heap or max heap. And they're just saying for a min heap that find min is the operation we care about. For max heap, find max is the operation we care about. If it's a heap, it never does both. We always choose one to make work. We never make both work. Okay, so questions about priority queues in general? Okay, so let's move on to talking about binary heaps. So binary heaps are going to be a kind of binary tree. We're going to use a binary tree to represent our data, but it will not be a binary search tree. Yes, it is ordered. It is not ordered like a binary search tree. Note that none of our operations were find by key, find by priority. That is not an operation we have, and we don't have that because our binary heap is not going to be ordered in a way which makes that operation efficient. Doing that operation, of course, is possible, but it's going to be linear time. We're going to have to actually, essentially, in the worst case, search the entire tree. And the ordering property we have is going to be that the parent is less than the child. So we're going to always refer to min heaps. So the least element is on top. And this is where we're doing our pre-computation. That's why find min is constant time, because find min is where, what's the root? There, I found the minimum. It's at the root. And the tricky part, of course, is maintaining that property. Just like with binary search trees, the tricky part was making sure that the left child was always less than and so on. And with like AVL trees, the tricky part was maintaining the balance property. The tricky part here is going to be maintaining that parent is always less than child property, no matter what we do to the tree. So when we delete the minimum, we're going to have to somehow end up with a tree where that's still true. When we insert an item, we have to somehow end up with a tree where we somehow inserted the item and move things around so that still it's the case that all parents are less than their children. So that's the essential ordering property. But we also have a different structure property, and that's, it's gonna be almost a perfect tree. That we're going to restrict ourselves to trees with a particular organization, which is going to let us use this cute trick to store this tree in a way where we have no pointers. So pointers are a lot of overhead in practice, you know, and we're going to just say that we're only storing trees which are nearly perfectly balanced, such that we can find a more clever way, in particular using an array, to store the relationship between parent and child. And this is going to be a place where we get a big savings over our traditional balance tree, where we have to have a lot of overhead, especially if our values and keys are pretty small, to store the left and right pointers. And we're just not going to have them. We're going to have a different way of finding left and right children. So let's talk about, you know, what I mean by we're, you know, almost perfect. So first, let's say perfect. So this is a definition of a term. We'll say a perfect binary tree or a complete binary tree. And that's where we have some depth and everything is at that depth. All the leaves are at that depth. So we use all the space up to that height, no empty spaces. This is what we'll call perfect or complete tree. So, and this is sort of the ideal we're going for. So, you know, this is perfectly balanced. You know, we can't possibly have a better balanced tree, obviously, as far as, you know, height everywhere is the same. The only problem with this is that, well, this does not work very well if instead of storing 7 items, I want to store 8. I can't really have a perfect tree that stores 8 items. So we're going to make a compromise, and that's going to be that in the case where we, you know, where we're going to have some extra items left over, we're going to allow them to go into the next row. And we're going to have them do that in a particular way. That we're going to be only missing the bottom rightmost slots. So here I have these nodes, which would be the next ones I add, are not there just because I don't have enough nodes to fill them in, but everything up to that is filled in. So we fill in the tree top row, then from the left for the next row, then from the left for the next row, and so on. And this is going to allow us to use a trick to compactly represent this tree. And the sort of preview of that is, well, if I'm filling in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, that's exactly what I'm going to store. I'm just going to store that list of nodes. And because I know the order I fill them in, I don't need to worry about storing explicitly the information about where they are in the tree. I just know if they're if it's at index 7, it's the 7th as I count that way. So we can formally define this, say that we can find what an almost complete tree is recursively. So we can say a single node tree, that's almost complete. And otherwise, it's almost complete if our left child is complete and the right child is almost complete, or the left child is complete and the right child is complete. Sorry, the left child is almost complete and the right child is I missed a minus one. And the right child is complete with height h minus one. So the cases we're dealing with here are, we have this case. So here we have, you know, this case here. So that's the second case here. So we have our left child here is almost complete with height h, and the right child with h minus 1 is complete. And we have this case here where when we add where the left child is complete with height h and the right child is almost complete with height h. So those are the cases we have to worry about. Sorry for missing a minus one. There. So this is how you can define that more formally. Generally, we won't have to rely on this because this sort of picture view of fill and front order, like, I think is easier to understand and easier to apply in almost all cases. So questions about what I mean by almost complete? Yeah.
Can the left child have two nodes at height h and the right child have no nodes at height h?
Can the left child have two nodes at height h? So the question is this fine? Yes. And this is, I believe, another example of this second case here. Yes, because almost complete includes complete. Which I guess is a subtle thing. Almost complete, yeah, and complete. Like, so these are almost complete includes cases where the tree is complete. Okay, so the advantage of having this restriction on our tree property is again that storage as arrays. So what we're gonna do is we're gonna say, I want to store this tree as an array, I'm just gonna write the nodes in order. And to keep things simpler, we're gonna start indexing the nodes at one. I can do everything I'm doing here, indexing from zero, I just need to add a whole bunch of minus ones and plus ones, but I'm just gonna keep my slides and the code we're gonna show you simpler by not doing that. In a real implementation in C++ that you want it to be like production quality, you probably would do that because you care about wasting the single array element, but you won't. So we're gonna say that we're gonna number the nodes in order. So this is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. And you can see that's exactly how I've placed them in this array. So I just, my node representation is my nodes have some string values in this case. I'm just storing those strings in an array. Because I don't need to store anything else, I don't need a node class in particular, because I'm not storing left or right or parent pointers. So obviously this has all the information of the tree. Since we know it's almost complete and we just know the ordering, this lets us reconstruct the entire tree, but that's not really good enough because we want to actually do operations here. Like, we want to say, I'm at B, how do I find its left child? That's something we're gonna want to do, and we don't want to like actually construct the binary tree to do that. We want to work from the array directly. Like, we could, you know, given this knowledge, you could write a program which reads this array and outputs a actual binary tree represented with left and right pointers. That wouldn't be hard. But that's not how we want to operate, and that's not what's going to make it efficient to use this data, this representation. So it turns out that we have these properties here. So the parent, with this numbering, it works out, is you divide by 2 and round down, which is what C++ does when you divide an integer by 2, because the result of a division is an integer. That always gets you your parent node. So for example, I divided by 2 is 9 divided by 2 is 4.5, which rounds to 4, and that's in fact D. And that's not a coincidence, this is exactly how that works out. And you can get this from the intuition that we have twice the number of nodes at each level. Works out that, you know, and also that when we are at level n, we have 2 to the n minus 1 nodes in total in the tree. And that's how you can show that this property always holds. So if you wanted to prove it, you just say, well, the size of a tree, if we're at height n, is 2 to the n minus 1. And then we kind of multiply the size essentially by 2 when we add each level, and that's how you can show that dividing by 2 actually gets you to the appropriate part of the previous level. And as another example, D here is index 4. If we divide D by 2, we get to 2. 2, which is B, which is in fact its parent. If we divide 2 or 3 by 2, we get to A. That's how we show that B and C have a parent A. And this will generally always hold in our tree. And conversely, we can use this to find children. The left child of a node with this numbering is take the index of that node, multiply it times 2. And the right child is the node immediately after that. So we take the index, multiply it times 2, and add 1. So another way of proving this numbering is to think, if I have, n nodes, I have 2 spaces I need to add to the end, which that's where the multiplying times 2 is. I need to make space for 2 things. Multiplying times 2 does that. It's sort of one way of thinking about it informally. And if you wanted to prove this formally, probably you'd use induction. And also the property of how many nodes there are, as we said. But this always holds, so you can dig. For the left child, we take index times 2. For the right child, we take index times 2 plus 1. And this means that we can use this to traverse this tree very efficiently. So when we want to traverse the tree, instead of having a pointer to a tree node, like you've been used to doing for like AVL trees and binary search trees, we're going to have an index into the array. That's going to be our pointer. And instead of looking for the left child pointer, we're going to multiply it times 2. Instead of looking for the right child pointer, we're going to multiply it times 2 and add 1. When we want to look for the parent, which we're actually going to want to do a lot, we're going to divide by 2. So given this, we can efficiently traverse all over this tree. And we did this without storing 3 extra pointers per node, which is what we would end up doing if we tried to implement this the way we saw for normal trees. And this was the big advantage of choosing this property that the tree is always almost complete. Because if it wasn't, we could use this kind of representation. So you can use this in general, but we'd have a lot of empty slots. That would be kind of wasteful. We wouldn't get the sort of storage we expect from, a binary tree, which is generally proportional to the number of items you're representing by the tree. But here, we in fact will. We won't need any extra space besides an array of equal to the number of items in our heap. So any questions about this indexing representation? Okay. So I mentioned earlier that our heap property, the big property besides the structure, was the ordering, and that was the parent is less than its children. So for example, this here is a heap. And we know it's a heap if we look at any node. Say 40 here, 50 is greater than that, 40 is less than 50, 700 is greater than 40, so 40 is less than 700. Note that this does not mean that you can just assume that because a node is some distance down the tree, it's less than another node some distance down the tree. So like over here, we have 80, and well, that's at the second level of the tree, and it's much bigger than 50, which is at the bottom. So we aren't organizing strictly that way, it's just a local property. And that's going to be fine, because this property is clearly enough to make it the case that up here, we actually have the minimum. But it generally won't be the case that you can assume that something near the top is definitely smaller than something near the bottom if they aren't actually in a parent-child relationship or parent-grandchild and so on. And of course, we could have trees which violate this property, so if you try to sneak a node at the bottom, which is smaller, that's wrong. Even if, as in this case, yeah, our the minimum of our heap is still at the top, but this is still not a heap, because the property of our heap is that we maintain it so that we have that property all the time. Just like with an ABL tree, we maintain it so it's balanced all the time, even if we don't care about the unbalanced part. So we're going to have a lab where you're going to have to use a heap, and it happens that we supply an implementation of a heap, like a concrete C++ implementation of a binary heap that stores integer keys without any associated values. And so this is a class called binary heap. It's linked off the slides page. If you went like the full C++ source file, we'll be talking about pieces of it to show how we implement the different operations sort of concretely. And what we have here is we have a single array, which in this case we're using a vector for, which represents the contents of the heap. And just to keep the indexing a little simpler, we're going to say that index 1 is the root, and we're not using index 0 for anything. We're going to leave index 0 as a dummy value we'll never read or write, besides initializing the array. And for some reason, this implementation maintains the heap size. Really, we could have used heap.size, but for clarity, it maintains a heap size, just to emphasize when the size is being updated. So with this concrete implementation, let's talk about some concrete operations. And we had three operations that we said were core to our priority queue. That was insert, find min, and delete min. And find min, we'll talk about it briefly later, but it's pretty simple. You just look at the root. So find min is return heap 1. Real simple. Insert, on the other hand, is a bit more complicated. And the algorithm we're going to use for insert in a binary heap is we add the new node as a leaf node. And because we have this almost complete tree property, there's only one place we can add it. It has to be the next slot going across, going left and down. So it has to be the next available slot. So if I start with this, the place where it has to go, if I add a new node, the new node has to be here. That's the only place I'm allowed to put it, because otherwise we'd violate our almost complete property. Conveniently, that location is also the next element of the array. So my first step in my insert is appending something to that vector.
Is that always true? Is it always the next element of the array?
Assuming that we maintain the array such that we are using all the slots and not having any unused slots besides that one at the beginning. Yes, it's not always the next element. So we add it as a leaf node, and well, we're not done, because if we look at this, well, if we stop here, we don't have a heap anymore, because 60 is greater than 25, and we want the heap property that the parent is less than the child. So what we're going to do is we're going to swap parent and child to move that new node up until we don't have to do it anymore. So we're going to say, okay, I have 25 down here, but 60 is bigger than it. I'm going to move that 25 up and swap it with 60. So I'm going to swap the two elements of the array, and now 60 is at the bottom, and my 25 that I just inserted moves up. And I'm going to keep doing this until I need to stop. So here, that's interesting. I meant to have 30 there. So if we had 30, we'd swap it down there. If we did 20, we'd be done. So I'll do two hypotheticals. If we have 20, that is unreadable. We had 20, 25, 60 would be done. If we have 30, 25. We still need to swap these. And we got this. So we'll keep going until we no longer need to swap things and to get the node into the right place. So we might stop immediately. We might end up inserting a node and it's already in the right place. But we'll just keep going up until, you know, we don't have to swap with a parent anymore. So the code that we supply for insert, it increments the heap size, it pushes back to add the node, because remember it's the next slot in the array, and then it calls this method called percolate up. And we'll see that for some operations, we're gonna also want to do this swap with parent operation, which we're calling this percolate up. That's the look at the node, see if it violates the heap property, look at the parent, is it actually less? If so, swap going up the heap. We'll have some other operations where we might want to do that. And so the basic property there is we do this swapping, and the implementation is we get the value we just inserted, and while the value is less than the parent node we're examining, we move a parent node down and advance up the tree. So conceptually, index is a pointer to the current node place we're trying to insert, and we keep proposing to move that up and seeing if we need to do that. And if we need to move it up, we move the parent down and then advance up the tree until we find out where we're putting it. And so we're gonna have a trail up the tree where everything moves down and the original node moves up. So this assignment here is this moving it up, and this assignment here are these moving down operations. Or I want in a different color. So this assignment here are the moving down operations. So are those assignments. And that's what this is. That's what this code is doing. So it's just an implementation of that swap with parent policy. So we go up the tree until we find out where we're actually less than the parent, put it there, put the new thing there, and move everything else down. And it happens that we're moving everything else down as we traverse the way up, just to simplify things and inserting at them. But this is the same as if we did a swap each step. So questions about this? So this is the hard part of our insert operation. So we have something here where if we look at this, this is, if you remember, this is amortized O of one, theta of one time. And then we have this percolate up, which is going to be, what's the runtime? So how do we look at the runtime of this? And the big question is, how many iterations do we have? Well, we're dividing index by two each time. So we have log base 2 of index. So at most, log 2 of index iterations. Because every time we divide index by 2, so you know, that's, so if index is 2 to the n, we have n iterations. And another way of looking at it is, at most, we change log base 2 of n nodes. And our worst case is that we have to traverse all the way up to the root. Sometimes we'll do better than that, and we'll be able to like stop immediately. And our insert will take, you know, constant time, but you obviously can construct patterns where that won't happen. Like if you want to construct the worst case, just choose an item to insert that's less than anything in the heap. So note that one thing when we did this swap with parent operation, when we if we had 30 here before and moving it down, that a reason why that was safe is that decreasing a node is always safe to do. Right? We never violate the property on the other side of the tree by decreasing the value of a node, and that's always what we're doing when we do this insert operation. You'll note that for delete min, this seems a little trickier. So we'll get to that later. But yeah, this is a nice shortcut we had, is that when we had 30 up here and changed it to 25, that is perfectly fine to do regardless, because we know that, well, if it's a smaller number, it doesn't, there's nothing that could have been over here in this other part of the tree. We didn't look at it at all that could cause a problem with. So as long as we're decreasing nodes, we don't have to worry about the rest of the tree that we aren't even looking at in this percolate up operation. But when we do delete min, it's not going to be so simple. Delete min, we're going to, at some point, you know, because we're deleting the minimum item, some nodes, places in the tree are going to have bigger values. So we're actually going to have to pay attention to, you know, are we violating the heap property? Okay, so one brief talk about the average case of insert. So practically speaking, if we like assume random keys, you know, insert is probably better than log n, sort of on average. And the way you can think about this is that randomly, we'd hope that the lower levels of the tree have the larger values. We know that that isn't true in general. We know that when I had, you know, the tree here, that, yeah, I can have 99 even though I have 25 on one side, that it's not always true, but randomly that property is true enough that, so if I'm inserting keys that are kind of in the middle of my key range, usually insert will be a little faster than going all the way up the tree. In fact, usually it won't have to go more than one level up in sort of our randomly set up heap. But this is not a worst case analysis, because the worst case is like we always insert lesser items, we always have to do the worst possible thing. Okay, so let's talk about the harder operation, which is delete min. So what we're going to do to start delete min, similar to what we did to do the insert, is that we're going to only play around with the last node. Because if we want to make the tree smaller, the only way we're going to have to do that, because we have our almost complete property, is getting rid of the last node in the array, which, remember, is the bottom row, rightmost node. And we're going to put that value up to the root. And we know that that's wrong. We know that it's the case that if there was, unless that value was a child of the root, there's no way that value could possibly belong there, because its parent was smaller and it's a child of the root. So we're going to need to fix that. So we're going to do something similar to what we did with the insert case, and we're going to look at our children instead of looking at the parent. So we're going to go down the tree, and we're going to swap with the smallest child at each step until we end up not having the heap property violated. So here, I'm deleting 10. So the first step is that I'm going to take 85, and I'm going to move it up to the top, leaving an empty space that we're not going to fill. And then I'm going to swap with the smallest child. So 85, not unexpectedly, violates our heap property. In fact, it violates it twice. Both, we have 30 here, which is less than 85, which is wrong. We have 80, which is less than 85, which is also wrong. And we're going to swap it with the smallest child. So why the smallest child? Well, because if we swap it with the other one, we don't get a heap anymore. So putting the smaller item on the top, well, it's smaller than the other child, so that's fine. Like, we're choosing the one which won't violate the heap property on the other side. If we did swapped it with 80, well, now 80 and 30 violate the heap property. 30 should be less than 80 because it's a child. It's not, so we can't do that. So this is where, for find min, unlike for our, for delete min, rather, unlike for insert, we have to pay attention to both children to make sure we aren't inadvertently violating the heap property. We have to choose between the two children, and we always choose the lesser one because that's the one which deserves to go closest to the top. So we keep doing that, and in this case, and probably in a pretty commonly, we end up putting the node at the bottom, not guaranteed. And then we're done. And the code for this, we do the similar thing where we adjust our heap size, get our result. Our delete min method in this case happens to return the item. We could obviously do find min and then delete min if it returned void. And we do our have our percolate down method, which, like percolate up, takes an index and does this swapping operation. And we have a similar sort of loop where instead of adjusting our index by dividing by 2, we compute the child indices and move to a child. So the number of iterations of this loop is, you know, less than or equal to the height. So in the worst case, we have to go all the way down to the bottom of the tree, and then we stop because we find out there's no left child, which is what this condition says. And we have some trickiness that we need to deal with, some special cases. So sometimes there's only a left child. So that's a case we need to deal with. Otherwise, we find the least child, and then we say, is it actually less? You know, and we have this sort of early termination. That termination, which is that the didn't go to leaf. That somehow we percolated it down, but we didn't have to go all the way down to the bottom of the tree. It happened to be the case that we had something even smaller already there, or even larger already there. And again, we're doing the same sort of multiple assignments here, where we have an assignment like there and an assignment here. And we have we go down our tree, and the assignment of heap index equals to the child is taken care of moving our nodes, moving values down the tree. So that's taken care of, moving values down the tree, and this assignment at the end is taken care of, moving values up the tree. Yes, let's not reverse this. So the assignment at the end is taken care of moving a value down the tree, and the other assignments are taken care of moving values up the tree. We have this, instead of actually doing swaps, we do one assignments going down, assignments as we go down the tree of moving a value, moving the child up, and also at the end moving the root all the way down. Sorry for confusion. That makes sense? Questions? Okay. And like with our insert, we can show that this is worst case log n because we have log n steps of that loop, and we're doing essentially constant work for each one. That we assign, potentially go all the way down to a leaf, which is log n nodes, doing an assignment each time to move a node up, and then at the end we move the root all the way down to the bottom is the worst case. And in better cases, we might not go all the way down the tree. Potentially, we end up getting really lucky and we like move down one step and we're done. So that's our runtime. So next time we'll talk about a few extra heap operations, like decrease key, how we do that. And then we'll talk about Huffman codes, which are an application where binary heaps are a really good choice for implementing them.